Today's Mishnah and Masechet Olot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is Olot Perek Gimel Mishnah Hey. So we learned the halacha before, not in this perek, but in the last perek, previous perek, the dam tvusa, which we didn't define very well, but dam tvusa we know is a tumah derabbanan. It's based on the deraisa halacha of revias dam. But dam tvusa is based on the pasuk mitboseset b'damayich. So somebody's bleeding to death. A dam that could be after death, which is batame, mixed with blood while he was alive. The rabbanon would go there that even though there's mixtures of dam, we're not sure what's what, that it's considered to be a vadai tuma min rabbanon. And it's batame b'ol and so on. So how exactly do we define dam tvusa? It's interesting. Turns out there are four completely different approaches to defining what exactly dam tvusa is. So dam tvusa, according to Rabbi Akiva, is where you have the meit sheyatza mimenu shminit b'chayav u'shminit b'moto. So basically, you had a person who was bleeding and he was close to dying. Some of this blood came out while he was alive. Some of it came out after he had already died. So according to Rabbi Akiva, we have no idea what, but we can, it's possible that this, most of this revius that we find might be from after his death. And therefore, that's why he says shminit. If we know for a fact that it was more than a shminit that was bled while he was alive, then there's no gezera. But if there's not more, so then we're gozer. So tain is Rabbi Akiva. Then we have Rabbi Yishmael's pshat. According to Rabbi Yishmael, there's no way that we're going to take dam that was definitely bleeding while the guy was alive and be mitzarif it for a revius for the guy would continue bleeding after death. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva's case is ridiculous. It's completely tar, that dam, because it's definitely not a revius of dam that was bled after death. So that's crazy. It's not revius ben ameis. So what is, therefore, the dam tvusa? Says Rabbi Yishmael, where you know that the guy was bleeding and there was a full shear that was after death. So there was a revius b'chayev, but there was also revius b'moso. Now the death blood is mixed with the life blood. So nita mize umize revi'it. So since I definitely had a revius of dam that was matame ba'oyel, so because of that, if I have the mixture, so now the Rabbanan said, the mixture is also going to be matame ba'oyel. That's min Rabbanan. But that's only because I was already machzik here, a clear-cut revius of dam. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Yehuda, Amar? Nah, ridiculous. That's water. That's blood like water. That is not real blood. So Zev is Zek, Kamayim, they made a movie out of that, I think. But so that's both of those bloods are considered to be water. The only din of Dam Tvusa is where the guy is on a cross being crucified. So over there, or something similar, where over there you have blood that is flowing continuously. It's not dripping. You see, you talked about cases of dripping. Dripping blood is never going to be dam tvusa for a very simple reason. Kama, kama, bantil. The halacha of kama, kama, bantil is where you have drops that are falling into a larger amount. A drop is always bantil. So then as each one drops in, the dripping, it's always going to turn into dam mechaim. It's not going to be metame. However, the way that the Romans would crucify is that they would open wounds, keep them open with nails or whatever they stuck into the guy. And because of that, there you don't have kama kama bato because you have the flow of blood. So what is dam tvusa? Where you have a guy who's crucified, he's a saluf, and you find taktav revias dam. So he was bleeding while he was alive, continued to bleed. Now the blood puddles underneath this crucifix, and now he's got himself at revias dam, which may be entirely dam that flowed after he died. So there it's tummy. But if you have somebody who was bleeding in little bits, it was damod minatev, and you find a revias dam, so then I would have said kama kama batel. And therefore all of the blood is tar. So this is the third sheet. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yehuda argues both on Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda says exactly the opposite. Why? Because remember, Rabbi Yehuda's shita is that min b'mino is in batal. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no such thing as kama kama batal, because blood falling into blood will never be batal. Therefore, Taina's ribbon, the exact opposite is true. The din is that the blood that is flowing out is actually tar. The blood that was dripping out is tame. So if you find, and we'll explain in a moment why the flow is tar. So if you find a revi'ez dam underneath the crucifix, it's tar. Why? This is based on another shita, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that the din is, this is found in the Braisa, the din is that dam is only metame, is dam tfusa, if it contains the blood that was bled at the time he died. So since if he's on a crucifix, the whole point is that there's always a matrix against which the blood is flowing. This is all part of also the psychology, the psychological effect of crucifixion and so on. So therefore, that last drop of dam may still be absorbed in the wood. It may never have reached the puddle that's on the ground. Therefore, dafkets the opposite. It's nothing to do with flowing or dripping. That's irrelevant. Because according to me, min bimino is in batal. But it has to do with the special halacha that dam tfusa includes the blood of death itself. And so because of that, since it might still be on the crucifix, it's dafka not going to be metame. And the only way that it would be metame is where we're not talking about that it's a crucifix. We're talking about a guy who is simply bleeding. He's on a bed, he's on the ground, whatever. So those would be four different approaches in what dam tfusa is. Okay. Now, we also want to give more definitions here in Perek Shlishi to the concepts that we brought up before. So one of the concepts that we brought up before, very simply, of course, was the idea of Tumas Ohel. The Tumas Ohel is being in the same area where, under the same roof, so to speak, where there is a mace. There was also the other Ohel, which is called Mahil, but that was essentially Maga, not Ohel. Now, what exactly would be the shear of Ohel? As we know, the shear is a tefach, ala tefach, and so on. Needs to be a cubic tefach. That way it would be chaytzitz b'fnei ha'tumah if there was a kezayah shomes inside of it or outside of it. The tumah can't penetrate in or out of that special ohel box, right? However, there is a special case where that doesn't apply. And this is a whole new halacha we haven't discussed yet. And it's called sof tumah latzeit. Sof tumah latzeit is a gzeira derabbanan. Where, let us imagine a situation where you have a mace in a house and the doors and windows of the house are closed. Now, the halacha is, let's say there's two rooms in a house. If you have a poter tefach between two rooms, so then the tuma can get out from one room into the other room. The same problem would occur if you have an air conditioning vent that is a poter tefach. Then the tumor will move along the air conditioning vent, which is why hospitals have such a difficult time in controlling tumor for kohanim and are basically reduced to just putting off an alarm that all kohanim should leave the hospital. But there really is very little to do because you can't shut down all of the vent systems in a hospital. So basically, the situation in which you have a mace inside of a closed building. Now, over there, you do not have an open window. You do not have an open air conditioning vent. You have a completely sealed, you close the doors, and you close the windows to a house in which a mace was nifter. Now, the din is over there. Any one of these doors or any one of these windows is obviously more than a tefach, by a tefach, right? And so, okay, you've got a patio, and there's this beautiful awning over the patio. As long as the door to the house remains closed, anything that's under the patio is not going to be tame, because there's no way for the tumah to get out of the door. However, the Chachomi made a takana, which is called sof tumah latzeit. Sof tumah latzeit means that if, in the end, we are going to have to get the mace out of the house, because obviously we're going to bury him, what door are we going to use to get the mace out of the house? So if a door is selected, or if there's only one door that is large enough, which we'll define what large enough means in a moment, to take out the body, that door is considered to be open now. And if that door is virtually open to the patio, then anything under the patio, under the awning, which is outside of a window, if it was going to be a window, whatever the situation is tummy. In a case where there was no particular door that fits the bill, and all of the doors fit the bill or don't fit the bill, then all of the doors and windows are considered to be open, and anything that is on a windowsill, a door opening, under an awning, whatever, becomes tame. Why? Sof to malatzeit. Okay. So now talking about that idea, suppose you have only a kizayit min hamet. What would be the shear of an opening that would be able to be viewed as the door that you will remove the meat through? One petach of a tefach, because you're only talking about a kizayit of a meat. If there's a full body, then you would need to have four tefachim by four tefachim, and only that would be considered to be large enough. So if you're going to be matzil tuma from the other openings, and everything is closed, and if you have one opening that is arba by arba tefachim, that opening will allow the tuma out, and all the others are considered to be closed. Or if you select an opening that's arba al arba for a body, then that saves the rest of the ptachim, windows, doors, and so on, from the concept of sof tuma latzeit. However, to be motzi tuma, as opposed to be motzi the mace, let's not get confused. To be motzi tuma from a house, or to get it into an air conditioning vent, all you need is a tefach al tefach, and that is what is necessary. This din of sof tuma latzeit has nothing to do with the tuma itself being yotze. Sof tuma latzeit means that the body is sof for latzeit. Nothing to do with it. Don't get confused between the two. So an opening that is a poteach tefach will allow tuma to escape, whether it's into an air conditioning vent, whether it's into a window, into the next room, whatever the situation is. So what would be the size that you would be considered not to be sof tuma latzeit out of the other ones? So we said, if it's a kizayit, it would be enough to have a shear of a tefach. If it's in body, then it needs to be four by four tefachim. But the din is that anything larger than one kizayit is put up to the next level. There's no shiurim in the middle. So it's either kizayit, which is the shear of a tefach, or anything beyond that is four by four tefachim. Rabbi Yossi says, let me just tell you something. It is possible to have less than a kizayit that will still require four tefachim by four tefachim. Imagine the case of an embryo that was miscarried in a house, where over there it was sufficiently developed to be considered to be a human mace, and you have only the shidra and the gulgolet, which are significantly smaller than the shear of the tefach. You're still going to need arba al arba. So that means that you've got one shear for a mace or the equivalent of the rove of the mace, and the other shear is for one kizayis, but that's only in terms of the basra mace. Mishnah Oyalais Perek Shlishi, Mishnah Zayin. So now, if you've got an area of a cube, remember, you require a cube in order to be able to encase a piece of a mace and to prevent tuma from getting out, or it could also be a cube that could encase a piece of bread, which then would prevent tuma from getting in. But in any event, it requires a minimal cube of one by one by one, miruba. So that is either mevi tuma, that will allow tuma to be present in anything that's inside of it, if it's together with something that's metame, and it will be chotzeitz minatuma. Now, let's put the two dinim together, okay? The shear of the size of the ohel, minimal cube of a tefach, and the din of sof tuma latzeit. And this turns out to be much more relevant than you would assume. We're talking about the case of an axe murderer. Guy breaks into a house, chops up the inhabitant, flushes him down the toilet. Okay. What is the din of the house? So basically, at this point, what you have is you have a drain under the house. In those days, the drains connected not to a central drain, but rather you would flush things out of the house and then, of course, close up the hole and have the toilets that we have. But you would close up the hole and anything would be flushed out into the street, right? Now, let's imagine the situation over here with the axe murderer. He's got a kezayit min hamet in the pipe under the house. How big is the pipe? How wide and how tall is the pipe? And how wide is the exit from the pipe to the street? And how wide is the drain in the house, which you covered when you flushed down the pieces of Pelegish Begiva through the drain? Okay. So these are the questions that you have to consider. So Kate said, let me put it all into perspective. You've got a drain pipe, a beev. This drain pipe is kamur, meaning that it has a top over it, like drain pipes have an app. And it's underneath the house. So now, if there's a poter tefach in that drain pipe, and also the exit drain from under the house into the street is also a tefach by a tefach, so yesh bi yitziyato poter tefach. So then we have the issue as follows. The din of tuma inside of it cannot escape the pipe. Why? Because the pipe is a tefach by a tefach, squared, and the cubed. And therefore, that stops the tuma from breaking out as tuma ritzutza would, if there's not a tefach by a tefach. Tuma ritzutza would have broken out into the house. It's not tuma ritzutza. So therefore, if it's inside the drain pipe, the house remains tahor. If it's inside of the house, anything in the pipe is tahor because it's protected from penetration of tuma, which remember goes up and down. But what about the opening into the house of the drain pipe, which is currently closed? Why wouldn't we say sof tuma latzeit? The reason we won't say sof tuma latzeit is because this murderer is going to be flushing the tuma out, not bringing it into the house. And so because of that, it's not sof tuma latzeit into the house from the drain pipe, since it has an opening that is large enough for a poter tefach, which is all you need for sof tuma latzeit on that side. So therefore, the pieces of the dismembered body will be flushed out into the street, and the sof tuma latzeit is from the other side, not into the house. Shederech tuma latzeit ve'in darka likanes. We're not going to be bringing the mace into the house, right? Now, imagine another case where the actual pipe is a poter tefach, but there's not a poter tefach of the opening into the street. Okay, so then if tuma is in it, the house is tome anyway. Even though if the tuma is in the house, the tuma is not going to penetrate the pipe. Why? Well, the tuma won't penetrate the pipe because the pipe is a cube. It's an anti-tuma cube. One tefach by one tefach by one tefach. And in this case, the halacha is that if the tuma is in the house, whatever is in there is currently tahor, and the derech of tuma, in this case, in the first case, is different than here, because the derech of tuma is latzeit, and because of that, the halacha would be that if it's inside the pipe, if there isn't any way for it to get out from the exit hole, because the exit hole is not a tefach by tefach, then you're going to have to be sof tuma, let's say, through the house, because that opening is the only opening that is big enough to get it into. So because of that, even though it's a poteach tefach and it will not be penetrating the house from the pipe that's running under the house, it will get into the house through the drain. So you'll say, but I covered the drain. But a covering of a drain, midrabana, doesn't help if it's sof tuma latzeit. So over here, we see clearly the effect of both of the halachas. In the other case, where the basa is actually in the house itself, it's not the derech for a normal case for tuma to be flushed down a drain. And therefore, you're going to remove the tuma from the front door, from a window, whatever. So over there, it's not the derech of tuma to be flushed into the pipe. And because of that, in the pipe, whatever is inside there is going to be protected because it's in an anti-tuma box. But if it's going to be, in the end, brought into the house in order to be removed from the house through the door, then even if it's sealed, it will be metame the house. How about if there's no poteach tefach in the pipe? Then even it doesn't matter. It's ein b'yitziato poteach tefach either. But that's not the point. The point is that in that case, if there's tuma in the house, so then anyway, the house is going to become tame because there's no protection from the tuma. The top of the pipe is not going to stop the tuma from going straight up, penetrating into the house, and then being metame everything in the house. The same thing is true whatever is in the house without needing to enter into the pipe. Since the tuma goes straight down and straight up, anything inside the pipe is going to become a makabel tuma because it's not in an anti-tuma box. Now, all of this is true, but it's only true if we're talking about a pipe. A pipe is something that was manufactured, and therefore the shear of the tefach al tefach is an intentional shear that was put into the pipe. But suppose, instead of a pipe, you had a hole in the ground. And this hole in the ground had been there before. It was made by a mole who made a hole through the ground. And that's what you're using as your sewer pipe. In that case, that chor, shechoreru, mayim, or shratzim, a mole made it, or water made its way through it, or there was ground that was basically eaten away because it was deposits of salt that dissolved, or even if you have a human being who took a truck that was full with rocks, and he dumped it, was a dump truck, he dumped all of the rocks into this space, and obviously some of the rocks were put in such a way that there was a tefach by a tefach by a tefach between them. But it was not his intent to form a tuma box. So, or for that matter, he took a pile of lumber, piled it up, and without realizing it, some of the lumber was moved to the side a little bit so that there was a tefach by tefach by tefach, so that he accidentally formed an anti-tuma box. In any of those cases, they are considered to be the same according to the Tanakhama, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, they do not count. Kol ol, says Rabbi Yehuda, kol ol she'eno asui b'dei adam, if they weren't made intentionally, then they're not considered to be an oil. Unless you're talking about something larger than the minimal oil box. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda would be made, if you're talking about a big thing, shkifim, sla'im, so you've got hollows in rocks in a mountain, or you've got these big caves in a mountain, of course that's considered to be an ohel, because he was only being chaylik on the minimal ohel box, but not on something that is, we'll see the shear is like the Mr. Watermelon's fist, but we'll get to be talking about Mr. Watermelon. That was the guy who's, remember we had him a few times, we met him, the guy whose hands were big as watermelons, right? Okay. All right, gentlemen, sorry for keeping you, but I figured, you know, you'd all want to get back into Olos. You want to bite off a chunk of those Mishnayos. So we're ready to go, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow, and we'll be able to continue on into the fourth parak. What do you think? Should we have Richie giving us a beautiful ending, even though he can't say the beginning? So what do you say, Rich? Hadran alach kol hamitamim.